Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, it's April the 4th, and this is Politrick here on Twin Radio. Sorry for not being able to broadcast last week. But we are back today, and we got a lot of stuff to talk about, man. Definitely going to be talking about the whole Deshaun Jackson saga. Got a lot of stuff to say about that. We added, well, we, meaning the country, added 192,000 jobs. That's 49 months of consecutive private sector job growth. Unemployment still at about, I think, 6.7%. Still, there was a few other things that happened this week that I also wanted to address as well. And we'll get to those later because I don't have my notes in front of me doing a lot of crazy things. And if the Deshaun Jackson thing will at least take up the first part of the show. Good morning, LaWanda. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Sky. I'm doing good.
Good. All right. This, and before we even start talking about Deshaun Jackson, understand this, people. Whether you're a manager, you know, coach, whatever your role in as leadership, it's a natural inkling to want your people, to want guys that buy into your way of doing things, your way of life, and how you go about business. As a leader, it is very difficult to have even one person who doesn't see things the way you see it. Because you can have 20, 30, 40, and all it takes is one person to start leading people astray. So every person in charge, that's natural, and it's nothing wrong with that. And as a professional coach or whatever, you are entitled to hire and fire at, you know, you don't have to answer to anyone. I got stuck there. You don't have to answer to anyone. But when you decide to assassinate a man's character to justify that firing, that's where I have a problem. Soon as the gang allegations came out, it raised the eyebrow. So I went directly to the NJ.com website, and I read the story in its entirety. And I see them reporting on a 2010 case that I know, in 2013, the gentleman that they're saying is Deshaun Jackson's childhood friend was actually acquitted. I waited to see what the LAPD was going to say. Their statement, we're not investigating Deshaun Jackson. We questioned him in regards to the case because the young man was on Deshaun Jackson's record label. So, yeah, they had affiliations, and he hasn't denied knowing this young man. He's even went to say, yes, sometimes I hang with people that, you know, I guess they say are gang members, but not as they do gang activities. And somebody will say, well, that's just as bad. How? If you back home and you in a club and some people you know are there and y'all cool. So is he supposed to say, oh, man, damn, homie in a gang now, so I can't take this picture? You can't do that back home. So did Deshaun Jackson make questionable decisions in regards to the associations? Yes. I mean, come on. I'm not going to sit here and say he didn't. But what I am going to say is that this was something that the Eagles knew about for at least 3 years, had dealt with, and had moved on. And then for the new coach to come in and dig it up, once again, just to try to lighten the blow that he's going to get from the Eagles fans about releasing their best player. It's so bad that the Players Association is even investigating his release. Not once again, Not that they didn't have a right to release him at their leisure, but to try to release him and then have this story come out and act like we weren't going to be able to connect the two and connect the, let's say, the circumstances that they both came out so close to each other. I mean, come on. And you have another player on that team who you can say has affiliations to a terror group. And you say, well, terror group, I will kick every nigger's ass in here on tape. You know? Somebody could say, wow, he's down with the Klan? Skinhead? He, in turn, was rewarded with a few days off from training camp and then a new contract in the off season. So, once again, the Eagles can have in their organization who they would like to have in their organization. But they can't try to destroy someone because they don't want them anymore. Ron Jaworski just dived right in. I got you, twin. Right in. Just dived right in on this story. Right in. Just took it as the truth. Started talking about FBI, people he know in the Philadelphia area, and all this kind of stuff. You notice you haven't heard him be able to talk about it on ESPN anymore, right? Ever since that day, you ain't heard a peep from Jaws. Because he went totally somewhere he shouldn't have went without facts. And then another thing is, if he did have things that he knew, that law enforcement was telling him, he wasn't supposed to get on national TV and tell it. So that's how you knew it wasn't true. LaWanda, go ahead and jump in.
Well, what Chip Kelly did was very dishonorable, because the only thing they had to do was say that, you know, he cost too much against their cap. That's it. You know, the Eagles have known about – I hadn't heard about – I mean, I know Deshaun's from L.A., but the previous concern was with him hanging out with a street crowd in Philadelphia. But the Eagles already knew that, and that was fine under Andy Reid's regime. And there was – he never got in trouble. He doesn't have any felonies or hasn't ever been arrested. So they were just keeping a close eye on that. But for them to go from that to this extreme, seeing game ties, it was just very surprised and shocked. It was like, wow, y'all are really trying to assassinate this man's character to really mess him up, you know, because everything in the NFL is all about your reputation. That's how you get paid, you know. So, you know, they might have jeopardized him getting more money than he actually got from Washington, you know. But fortunately, he was in high demand. I think he only ended up with, I think, $8 million a year when the contract with the Eagles, they were supposed to pay him $10 million. But for them to get rid of Deshaun Jackson, I think it was just basically he thought that Deshaun was insubordinate to him. And instead of saying that, if that's the case, then just say that, okay, he's insubordinate. I don't think he's going to fit in around here. Because now you hear these anonymous sources coming out saying, oh, Deshaun wasn't a team guy. He was a me guy. You know, he needed to go. But that's a whole lot different from saying gang ties. You know, he doesn't have gang ties. That's what I'm saying, just man up.
And Twin, I'm gonna let you jump in, but that I want to stop you there, because that's what I'm getting at. I heard that same anonymous quote today, and I'm like, okay, once again, if that's the problem, Say that and move on. Don't try to save the face of your organization now and almost put this on him. Oh, he knows it's not about gay. Well, that wasn't what was said to him. That wasn't what was said about him.
This is putting a lot of players on notice who, you know, possibly are thinking about joining the Eagles in the future, how they roll. I would have great concerns. If I was a football player, I would have great concerns. Okay, this is how they're gonna act, you know, when and if they want to get rid of me, if they don't have any viable reasons.
Wait, Twin, in this is it in a nutshell. Twin, I'll let you jump in. This is not about DeSean Jackson or anything like that. This is about the New England Patriots. As of today, or as of the day before that DeSean Jackson story, they were the cover story for a gang, a person in the NFL having gang ties and having gang activity in Aaron Hernandez. And now all the pictures that are floating around are of DeSean Jackson. And then I want to say gang members in quotes, Freeway and Neef. That's the picture they had of the Philadelphia gang members he hang with. You know, like, once again, if Freeway and Neef have street ties, he was hanging with them as entertainers because that's their job. It's congressmen who break laws, senators who become felons. Do people stop, you know, Hank? No. They still chill with their friends or whatever. And look, I know people will call in and say, yeah, Scott, but they gotta get rid of all of that. I'm like, look, everybody's gonna live their life. And some people know how to just cut everybody off, and some people can't. And the people that can't will deal with some consequences. But that just does not justify what the Eagles did for somebody who didn't even have a misdemeanor, damn, a felony, wasn't at any spot where anything got broke down, wasn't allegedly caught up in any type of scandal, nothing. And now he's the cover boy for, you know, gang affiliation with pro athletes? Go ahead, Twin.
If I'm a black person and I'm on the Eagles team, I would be looking at myself in a whole new light right now, because they would rather have a nigga hater than a nigga lover. There is no way. Oh, and shout out to the Eagles for releasing them and giving them to my Redskins. I appreciate that. That is a beautiful, that's going to be a beautiful team thing next year with RG3 and DeSean Jackson. Oh, I'm just happy. I'm just happy to know. Oh, boy, no. I'm just happy. But to me, for them to sit there and say that was gang, he was in the gang and he was gang related and yada, 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 and I was sitting there waiting on this dude on my page, it was like, you can have him on the team. We don't want that dude on our team because he's affiliated with gangs. And I said, what gang is he affiliated with? So, of course, I already knew where he was going with the picture on my page anyway. He posted a picture of his record label, Locked In or whatever it is. And it had some reputable characters on there. And so I said, well, scroll that a little bit further on that same website that you took that picture from and read the story where ESPN did a story in that exact same studio with the Make-A-Wish segment for DeSean Jackson and some little kids in Philly that was his favorite play. And they was in the same studio recording a song for him. So let's see how much gang affiliation or ties was going with that story. When they went in there, I mean, did they have armed security guards walking with them? Did they think that, oh, no, we're not going to shoot him in here because he's affiliated with gangs? Nobody brought up the gang affiliation until Chip Kelly did it. And like you said, it would have been real easy for him to just sit there and say, he doesn't fit in our scheme. He doesn't – I would have been happy with him saying his work ethic doesn't fit into what we're doing.
He doesn't follow the Eagles way of life. He doesn't do the
I could have been
Eagles.
Happy with all of that stuff. But for them to sit there and say, oh, we let him go because he had gang ties and affiliation. I know people in jail right now and I know why they're in jail. I know what they did to get in jail. I still consider them my friends. I'm not going to turn my back on. I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, no, nah, man, I don't want to perceive them with Twin Radio that they're going to be a part of Twin Radio. And we ain't messing with Twin Radio because they're affiliated with people in jail. Everybody knows somebody in jail or who's been in jail, or everybody has that one, a couple of few black sheep in their clique that they know that they can communicate with, but they really can't hang out with them.
And look, yo,
I know somebody, you know somebody, but Wanda knows somebody that was like, eh.
Got cousins
cool.
And uncles.
When
exactly.
I was working, hey, yo, when I was working for the city, I remember I had somebody come in because they were talking about their neighborhood. And I remember, you know, he getting buzzed back to my office and stuff. And he was like, yo, they look at me like I'm public enemy number one. I said, yo, you are public enemy number one. But sit down. And this man looked across from me. He was like, Scott, check my record. I don't have any felonies. I live where I live, and I'm not going to, you know, confirm or deny any allegations. But I will say this. If there was anything out there for anybody, a lot of us wouldn't be doing what we do. You know, I said, hey, come on, man, you know, I hear that story, you know, all the time, you know. And, you know, it's jobs, bro, and it just might not be, you know, the jobs that people want. And at this time, I could honestly look that man across the table and say that. And I'm not going to lie. I say at least 4 to 5 are like the younger, more impressionable ones that was just trying, like, getting down with that street. Like, you start seeing them on the bus going, you know, to a little fast food job or what have you, man. And when you have DeSean Jackson having these guys come in and record a song like that, he's thinking, man, yo, if I can help these dudes make some legal money, maybe they'll stop doing what they're doing. It's not about him wanting to be a gang member or wanting to associate himself with gang. He's saying, yo, I know this dude better than any of y'all. And I think, yo, if I can help this man make a legal way of life, a legal living, that he might let go of that life that he's leading right now. You know.
That's his way of reaching back to his community.
Yeah, and in some ways, you know, it's even like a way to try to help public safety. Carnell, what I always talk about is like they always, you know, talk about hanging on corners and this, that, and the other and all that. But then every time something's open or what have you, that's a problem or that's a menace or that's this or that's that. So you pull opportunities away and then – you criticize the opportunities. You not even opportunities, but to say, okay, well, we ain't got nothing else to do but just to chill in front of our crib now. And I just, oh man, I don't know. You have to be in DeSean or somebody that comes from a neighborhood that he comes from shoes to understand that.
And I mean, it's just sad that he automatically got tied to gang ties because if go back to the Super Bowl when Richard Sherman was doing all this stuff and scaring the hell out of Aaron Andrews doing it on taping or whatever it was, and the first thing they said, well, he's from L.A., he knows gang members. You know, L.A. is not all gang members. It's gangs everywhere. But as soon as you say he's from L.A., forget everything else he's done. Just know that he's from L.A., and they're going to assume that he's in the gang, and he know gang members. And that's the part I have a problem with. I'm like, L.A. is a beautiful city. Let it go. Not everybody in there is a Blood or a Crip. Not everybody in there is MS-13. Not everybody in there is a part of a gang.
Yo, it's more actual gangs, like, per, like, square miles in, like, Northern Virginia than it is in L.A.
Exactly. But as soon as they say they're from South Central LA, they automatically assume that there's boys in the hood and they all know each other. They all a part of it. And I'm like, yo, let it
and that,
go.
Well, one thing that Richard was saying, because he wrote a letter the other day about it. He was saying how
did y'all read that letter?
They have to. I heard it on First Take.
It's a beautiful. it was the best written letter I've ever read in my life.
Yeah. So one thing they were saying is that these boys have to return home. If you turn your back on everybody, they can't go home.
That's what I was getting at. That's what I was getting at when they tried to criticize him for some of the pictures or whatever. I'm like, oh, they didn't even have to show up at the spot together. You know, Deshaun could have came in there with some of his more, let's say, savory, you know, associates or whatever. But is you know, gang is, you know, the people that he know that are in gangs, you know, they like, yo, D, what's good, bro? Or send a bottle over to him. What he's supposed to do, just not say, you know, and drink and act like he can't go say what's up. He go over there, what's going to happen? Everybody's phone going to go up?
Yeah, that's true.
It's amazing. It's just amazing to me what people, look, Chip Kelly did what he did. Right, but then how some in the media even just like try to like carry the story even further, you know, or just keep that that little carrot out there, like, but yeah, but still, no, this was bad. This was bad from a PR standpoint, from the Philadelphia Eagles standpoint. This was bad from a PR standpoint for Chip Kelly and the owner, what's his name, Jeffrey Lurie. It's bad. You know, you just like LaWanda said earlier, who in their right mind be like, yo, I can't wait to go play in Philly. First of all, you got to deal with their fair weather fans. All right? You already know. You could go from hero to GOAT in 1.5 seconds. You know,
yeah.
Playing for that organization.
They threw snowballs
you know,
at Santa.
Come on. They threw snowballs at Santa Claus, all right? Be clear.
Yeah.
Like, they don't play, all right? But
they're
then
mean.
You have but then you have to deal with an organization that don't even know how to make a separation from employer to employee without having to throw you under the bus and assassinate you. Once again, not They even came out and said, we wanted to let him go because we didn't feel right making a trade to another team and making this guy someone else's problem. Other teams was like, yo, when? Yo, when we talk trade? Like, you know, you was trying to, like, you know, rape us. So we was like, hey, you're going to get rid of him anyway, so we're going to wait and we're going to get him for the low.
For some reason, I think that they thought that he wouldn't have that many suitors. I don't know why they thought that, but maybe that was their logic.
Right after 30 minutes after the announcement, four teams had already contacted his agent, and RG3 must have been on the plane.
He was. RG3 was on the plane. On the plane to D.C. to meet up with them, and then they flew back to in the same exact plane, flew back to L.A., and they had dinner out there. But now ain't nobody talking about that because it's RG3. He ain't really able to win, but you see, that Wale picture was circulating everywhere with him, D'Angelo Hall, and all of them sitting in that D.C. restaurant.
Yeah, and then they make it seem like Wale is a gang member. Come on, he's sure to be, man, come on. Hey. Yo,
like Wale is a college dude who dropped out of college to pursue his dream. I've never heard anything gang affiliated with him.
Thank you. But because he was in there with the shades and the dreads or whatever, you know, it was like, I'm like, how is that picture bad? He in there with professional athletes and an entertainer. Yeah. Good morning, Taylor Brown. Shout out to her. As soon as it went down, RG3 was making flight plans. Like, dude, like, it was like, oh, what? Yo, let me get on the phone and make this happen right now. Hey, Mr. Snyder. Yes, yes, you can have a plan, yo. Go get it. You know, it's all good. And this quarterback who has taken so much, bad press for being this selfish person and all this kind of stuff. It's coming from a Cowboy fan, all right? This quarterback took all his grief, he's not a team player, the team don't like him, he lost the locker room, all this stuff. And he didn't go talk to anybody. He said, yo, we need this dude, I know we can afford him, let me go try to talk him into coming to D.C. And the only reason we knew that happened was because DeSean Jackson told us.
Exactly.
Yeah, RG3's reps called in to First Take. They were like, oh, he didn't file specifically for that. He was in L.A. shooting a commercial or whatever, and they met up for dinner, I knew what it was. It was like he wanted to get this guy on his team, and I don't blame him.
So,
back to the part of RG3, he lost the locker room. He actually won the team player award from the same locker room he lost. They gave him the most prestigious award for the Redskins. So they didn't lose the locker
weird.
Room. There was everybody else that was sitting there saying he lost the locker room because they said they respected him more now than what they did last year by playing through that injury, knowing that he won't fully ready to come back. So they respected him for that more than anything. And so I'm sitting like, so I'm looking at all this stuff coming out. White people kill me with this shit. They are the most simple bunch of group of people I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, you goddamn right, I'm calling out all white people that sit there and let one positive thing happen.
Black people too, man. But throw Jason Whitlock in there too, man. It's some black folks that jumped on
that. That fat bastard don't count.
Yeah, Jason Whitlock is terrible.
That fat bastard ain't anything the nigga do.
Sucker, man.
I ain't never heard him say anything positive
about
a black person.
Of how he got out there or was he there, whatever. All I know is he showed up at the man's door. Like, yo,
yeah.
Let's do it. And my whole thing is they weren't the only one. Other people was like, yo, you ain't got to go to D.C. first. Like, because they already knew wherever he went, they weren't going to let him leave without a deal.
Mm-hmm.
They already knew it.
I didn't think he needed to go back to California. And so I was hoping that he went because Oakland, he definitely didn't need to go to Oakland. I just didn't think that was a good
place
for him.
I agree with you on that one because I'm like, the worst thing he could have done was pick any team in California to go to because they never would have let him live that day. And I'm not saying for his own personal being, but for his well-being and his reputation, they would have definitely destroyed him. By saying, oh, he's going back home. He's going to be back in the games. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And the scrutiny would have been so heavy on him, it would have been unbearable for him, I think. I don't care.
He went to the perfect team just because of just the social breakdown in D.C., you know? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to get booed on the road no matter where you go. But they know at home they could care less. They already know. They know people from those neighborhoods. Look at D.C. and all the stuff that everybody think it's about. Go outside of the Capitol and see how it is out there or what have you. So he got the perfect situation. I like the fact that Ryan Clark is there. Not perfect.
Yeah. No, Ryan's very...
That's the perfect fit for him. He got a lot of leaders on that team right now with Santana Moss. He got Ryan Clark. And I hate to say it, they just signed Colt McCoy. So I'm like, they building some pieces around that team, being I'm a Redskins fan, that I appreciate. They got a lot of people in there. They didn't waste a lot of money, but they got a lot of veteran leadership in that man. I wish Brandon Fletcher was still in there. But, hey, he's gone, whatever. But, He in the perfect fit right now.
Yeah, so I really like, that situation, but I just hate the fact that it always comes to, this outside the box way that we lose our job. You know, it's like once again, it just couldn't be, hey, It just not gonna work. Like what he told Deshaun, but to put all of that stuff out there and then have Ron Jaworski like basically take the baton and then he run with it, to give it some more steam or whatever. And while I'm getting on Ron Jaworski, I give credit to those who were like, oh, he'll get signed and he'll be signed before the week is out, like Adam Schefter. I really love the way he come out and put everything in perspective. He didn't defend Deshaun Jackson, but he said, look, if you go across the NFL, you're going to have 60, 70%, maybe even 80% of players who know somebody from their childhood who is affiliated with some type of unsavory activity. He said, it's just the facts and is what it is. And as long as I've been covering Deshaun Jackson, we knew about friends that he had, but we haven't heard anything that would say he's broken the law or associated any type of illegal activity.
And even Skip went to his defense. Skip Bayless went to his defense. He said, I would rather have 100 Deshauns than one Riley Cooper on my team.
That's what he said. Exactly.
He said, I'll take Deshaun over Riley Cooper whatever you lay in front of me, because he said, it's known that he hates me. Skip said, I can't say the word because I don't even like the word. But he said, he actually got on TV, on camera, didn't know he was being videotaped or whatever. But he said, alcohol is the truth serum, and that's how he really felt at that time right there.
Oh.
He came out of his mouth and said it. So how many more times has he said it? Even Skip said,
videotaped. He was out there amongst tens of thousands of people. Once again, I always give people a pass when, like, they at home and don't know what's going on or whatever, and unless they're running for office. Then, all bets off. But if you're an entertainer, an athlete or whatever, and somebody, slip a little recording in or whatever, but when you out amongst just globs of people when you say stuff, it is no expectation to privacy or nothing. I even gave, what was the actor who cussed his daughter out on the answering machine talking about?
Alex Baldwin.
I can tell. Okay. I'm like, yo, imagine. I said, I know it's a black father that said that to their daughter. That was messing
like
with a white suit. I was like, please, I ain't getting mixed up in that nonsense. I'm like, hey, if you taking people answer machine tapes, please, the stuff that you find on those things and voicemails and all that kind of stuff. But when you're out amongst that many people, camera phone with him, please. You meant to say that, and you wanted to be Billy motherfucking badass until it came back and you had to face some of those nigger teammates.
And
yeah, remember that guy
there,
who played for
vacation.
The guy who played for them, he came from Baltimore. Yeah, he came from the Ravens. Yeah, Kerry, he said something to the fact like, I'm one and where you don't want to mess with. Or whatever to him, and he didn't say
that. And then that Joker went on a sabbatical for a whole weekend during training camp after that incident because they knew that they had it in for him. And it took Mike Vick to sit there and say, basically, we know what he said, and he's our teammate. He never did really say we got his back and stuff like that, but he just said he's our teammate and left it at that.
Yeah, but
yeah,
see,
he calmed the waters.
Mike Vick
gave that cat $25 million. You give him $25 million.
They still have Mike Vick on the rope, though, what I'm saying? So, he had to go out there and do that. Like, look, man, they added you about them dogs. Go on out there and say that, man. We need you, Mike. So Vick had to go on out there and lack of a better term, call the dogs off, that's what that was all about, man. But like I said, man, we're gonna wrap this segment up, man. But once again, man, I just wish teams, organizations, whatever, just learn how to handle things with a little bit more tact, than how the Eagles handle that. And, you know, not that it'll help him now, because, you know, because he's gone and he's on to another team, but I really feel like they owe an apology, and I hope that what the Players Association finds out that, you know, they did act illegally, and I hope they get fined, and I hope that they're ordered to apologize to him, because, like, I try to look at this from the most objectionable eyes I possibly can, and I just see no way in which this was done, you know, in the right manner. And I just can't find any way. And I'll let y'all have closing comments on this subject before we go to the next one as well.
No, with Deshaun, like I say, it was unprofessional. It was more than tact. Like, they lacked tact. They were unprofessional. And, you know, you're as an NFL team, that's a black eye. I'll never look at the Eagles again. Well, unfortunately, I don't have to root for them because I only rooted for them. I'm a player fan. So Vic was there. As long as Vic was there, I was rooting for him. So thankfully, I don't have to root for them again because I never liked them anyway. But they just showed how unprofessional that they were. I thought they were unprofessional dating back to the T.O. Thing. But this just emboldens it for me. And I just don't respect them as an organization. And they're always saying how much class that Jeffrey Lurie has, but, you know, this doesn't look good for him.
And all I'm going to say is that it just shows how fickle the media is by just allowing that story to leak out like that. No research, no nothing. They see a picture with him taking. They see him taking pictures with alleged gang members and associated gang members, and you know everybody just was going to jump on top of that. What? Oh, we don't want him on that team. Just like everybody that hates the New York Jets now, all of a sudden, really hate the Jets because Mike Vick on that, because what he did 7 years ago. Let that nigga live, man. Let him live, yo. Let the song make his money. Look at his record compared to some of the people in your family. Just realize that your family members are no better than Deshaun Jackson. They in jail. He's not. He's living his life. Let the man live. Until he do something, I have no problem with him. But let him do something first before y'all go labeling him, because everybody is so quick to label somebody about something just because they see a picture, not knowing the whole entire story. And that's the part that pisses me off.
Yeah, man.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I will say that Deshaun, he needs to grow up. You know, I follow him on social media, and, you know, he's 27 now. It's like, come on, dude, you need to grow up, make better choices, and represent him. He needs to represent himself better than he does, and the things that he says, the things that he tweets, he just does. He just needs to mature. And
I hope this was an eye-opening experience for him, too. Now, I ain't saying the Eagles wrong for getting rid of him.
You know, once again,
I'm just saying they did wrong for how they got rid of him.
See, you know, my whole thing with that, I agree that you need to watch, like, who you hang with, but I just feel like he didn't do anything wrong other than in the locker room. And in those points, he needs to grow up. But what he did outside of football, I felt like he handled it, like, as best he could. And he didn't get caught up in anything. You know, he was simply questioned, like, about, you know, how did he know this guy? You know, your name was, in his phone. Like he was questioned like that. It wasn't even a question of, yo, was you with him? You know, did you supply him with the gun? Like, none of that kind of stuff. So, you know, yes, you know, the locker room stuff that's come out, it's always been talked about with him. You know, and he had a coach that kind of knew how to deal with it, Andy Reid. And that, you know, enabled it. That doesn't excuse Deshaun, but That's basically what it is. And, yeah, from that standpoint, if he goes to Washington and becomes a distraction in the locker room or, God forbid, outside the locker room or whatever, then, yes, you know, whatever is the consequences, hey, he got to take those straight on the chin. But I just hope that the media let go of this gang angle, and you know, and focus on the other stuff. And then in regards to the Redskins, he should get a clean slate anyway. It's a new locker room, you know, new contract, and you know, let's just see what happens.
You ever notice that when you know, just the color thing, when the white players like Ricky Incognito, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody had said something that he had gang ties, but that subject is never approached with them. That's disturbing, and that dude is violent, and he's shown those tendencies and everything, but it's just, oh, well, he has emotional issues, and he's seeking help, and that's always the case.
It's always emotional issues with them. It's always somebody did something to him. Back when he was a child. It's back when Ben Roethlisberger damn near raped that girl in a bathroom stall. Everybody forget about that part. But yeah, there goes, got a contract, man, he happily married with children. But we just look gonna let him live his life. Nobody brings that up. Nobody brings that up because, hey, it is what it is. But
it's just sad.
They let Mike Vick sign with a new team. Oh, Lord, the world is coming to an end because somebody is paying this man millions of dollars to play football, and he killed all those dogs, and yada, yada, yada. You knew, I was like, and I had to tell somebody, you know, I can know what he did, no. But that was 10 years ago. God damn, let it go. He went from the Atlanta Falcons to the Philadelphia Eagles, to the Jets. He went to three teams, so that means two teams won when he got out of jail.
I'll give you one better if it go to that, you know. And I'll ask them. I say, do you condemn anybody who fights dogs, no matter what line of work they? Yes, I do. I say, take a ride with me down into the hills of North Carolina one Saturday afternoon day, you know. And I show you something. You'll see bankers, all kinds of people there putting money up. So like. This wasn't some isolated, you know, thing that Mike Vick, you know, put together. And there have been more dog fighting busts since then, bigger, with more money, that hasn't gotten 2% of the coverage of the Mike Vick situation. Wasn't prosecuted the same way or anything. So,
yeah, nobody looks at the fact that he could have gotten probation, instead of being sent to prison, and the fact that dog fighting at the time was like a $500 million industry. They have magazines and everything for dog fights, and nobody ever looked at that. But the reason that Mike Vick was such a story is because it happened in the summertime, and you know, after baseball, whatever. See. Things are slow during the summertime after the finals or whatever, and that's when it happened. So the ESPN and the other networks, they didn't have anything to talk about, so they harped on him, and he just latched onto it. And it was a bigger story. Many people have made that analysis about it, that it happened in the wintertime or something, it might not have been as big as it was. But as far as time, during the time he got sent to prison, you know, there was a lady who, she killed her husband, and why she did it was like a stupid reason. And she got like 7 months, and Mike Vick got 23 months. And I was like, yeah, really? This is quite interesting how just things are different in this country. You know, you taking dogs' lives over a human life.
I know this is going way off topic.
More people that are upset at Michael Vick than it is at the people who bankrupt this country. It just, like, you could go on down the line, and the anger towards Mike Vick is more angry than anything that actually affects their lives. And it's just unfortunate that he's gonna have to deal with that. But I'm just glad that he still has a job. He's gonna still make money doing, you know, what he loves to do. So it, you know, as much as people going to talk about, oh, you know, they're going to hate the Jets or whatever, he's going to get love in that stadium, every, you know, the 8 home games he has there. So.
And you know what's so sad about it? Everybody talking about what Mike Vick did. Do you realize PETA is a no-kill? They kill the animals after a certain amount of time. So just think about this: in 2013, they killed over $2,000 in cats.
Mhm.
The same.
But
company.
They did it humanely, so that's their
the same.
Well, I hope you were saying that sarcastically.
They gave them all that Mike Vick donated a whole bunch of money to, thousands upon thousands upon hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. The same company that persecuted him killed 2,000 dogs and cats just last year. But that's humane. But so then I had another conversation with somebody that was, of course, on their page going on about it. I'm like, do you eat cow? Do you eat chicken? Do you eat turkey? Do you eat fish? They was like, yeah, well, I'm pretty positive that them animals will still want to be alive, too. So think about that when you've been munching on that, munching on that burger you got in your mouth. And I'm still like, I'm just saying, but there are dogs. Who gives a shit? National Geographic has a show called Wild Dogs. They show them how them wild dogs live. They hunt packs. They hunt down animals. They kill them. What do you want them to do? Not all dogs are domesticated. I hate to point them out. And the same ones that hated the fact that he did it will not own a pit bull because they're scared of him.
It's true.
I don't understand.
They're illegal in cities down here. I think they're illegal in Miami.
They are illegal in Miami because of supposed drug dealers and stuff like that, using the false status symbols and stuff like that. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. It's a goddamn dog.
What's the status symbol?
Pit bulls.
Are you serious? I didn't know that was on.
Yo, see, yeah. Look, right? Look, man. Like, I used to have these opinions about certain dogs because I never was around people who actually owned so-called aggressive dog, you know, like, I know y'all hear me talk about Sean LaVega all the time, like, he has, like, those dogs from, Colombiana, and Presser Canary, you know,
yeah.
So, you know, if you train a dog to kill and to fight or whatever, no matter what the breed is, that's what it's going to do. But if you train a dog to be loving and protect, that's also what it'll do. You know, and,
yeah.
I think too many times we get caught up in, these opinions about, people, animals, dogs, whatever, without knowing. Once again, those dogs was trained to fight and kill. You train a child to kill. They learn how to pull the trigger. They're going to be nice. So, you know, and the thing with me is that, like, I'm not a dog person, but I do know that. Like, you know, like, you know, like, I'm around these dogs, and they, you know, yeah, I can't wait for Sky to move them, you know, tear them up. They jumping on me, you know, whatever. So, and it's the same dog that, like, if stuff got hectic, like, yo, what up, and be ready to tear something up. So, I just think that if people are going to be critical, not of just dogs or anything, educate yourself. You know,
exactly.
It sounds simple, but I'm just telling you, more than movies, more than the Mike Vick saga, more than just dog fighting and what's the main dog used in dog fighting? No, educate yourself. You know, what about the dogs that aren't used in dog fighting? You know, yeah, I know there are going to be situations of maulings in neighborhoods, but once again, you're talking about, people being irresponsible in, like, a lot of cases. You know, they were running freely down the street, or they got out of an apartment, and anybody that's been in apartment buildings, some of my white listeners, you know, I know, but you wouldn't believe how some people live, you know. But things like that are going to happen. But if you have somebody that is responsible, I just don't think the breed of the dog, you know.
I kind of disagree with you on that, and because I think that, I mean, it's been said that some breeds have innate something inbred in them that breeds violence. Like when I was a kid, I had to run from my life
Wait. You're talking about data information just recently. I'm talking about two days ago. They said that pit bulls are no dangerous than other dogs unless they're trained to be dangerous. So, you know, where did you get this information from, and what's the date on it? And then, Carnell, with you being a dog owner, I would love for you to jump in here.
When I was a kid, I was like 8 years old. My friend's Rottweiler tried to bite both of us. You know, I remember that. I had to run for my dog in little life back then. So, you know,
I could say a Chihuahua, you know, was biting at my ankles when I just came from the store a few minutes ago, which is true. Now, yeah, I'm not scared of that dog, but I didn't do anything to it. And it naturally, was barking and trying to bite me. So,
Rottweiler wasn't trying to bite my ankles, though. He was trying to bite me.
But Scotland City Boxing dogs, man, they are scary looking dogs. Both of them over 100 pounds. But one of them is a half thick. He's a half thick bull. But Scotland, though, they won't harm nobody unless you do something to harm us or them. So they just forgot he was even in there. And they were just sizzling as I paid no attention to him. And that's what killed me when people see me outside with them. They were like, oh, we love your dogs from a distance. I'm like, do you realize my dogs ain't paying that one lick of attention to you right now? But if you come over here with that fearful attitude, of course they're going to look at you funny. But they just sat right there, didn't do anything, looked at them, and sniffed them, walked away. That's all they did. I ain't had to tell them nothing, but come talk, hey, get that. And they get that.
So, you know.
It's all in the looks a lot of times. The looks and the grill, their teeth, you know. Doberman's, Rottweiler's,
And once again, I guarantee you, like, when from the time that he got or she or whoever the owner that had that dog, it was trained from a sick'em and, you know, a fight, tough, you know, bite, you know, standpoint. And, you know, that's, unfortunately, that's what a lot of people get their dogs for, and they don't realize they don't have to be trained that way to be protective. So that's why I think it should be, I think it should be more regulated anyway, because I see too many, you know, people who, like, they shouldn't own anything that has life, you know, and I see them owning dogs, and I'm like, whoa, you know, I could just imagine, you know, what will happen if things, you know, flip over. But look, let's get into some politics. I think we got a month until the city council elections in Lynchburg, Virginia. Trinae Tweedy is a big name that I see out there for one of the at-large seats. I don't know if people remember. I'm a little questionable about her, not because of anything bad, no corruption, nothing like that. I just didn't know what her being on council would mean to people in some of the poorer neighborhoods. And when I say poor, for those listening from Lynchburg, I just don't mean Ward 2. You know, there's government housing in all wards, I think, except three, I think. You know, what are those people going to do? I see things, and not just to pick on the Hill City, because it's in other cities as well, is more stuff that people don't need versus stuff that they do. And they're getting caught up in this corporate you know, takeover kind of thing, and neighborhoods are losing identities because they're losing landmarks and businesses that have been there for 20 or 30 years, you know, in exchange for a one size fit all type thing, like with your Walmart factor. So when I think of, you know, somebody voting somebody in for council, like, you know, what type of grants are going to be made to spur minority business owners and minority business ownership, you know, and, you know, that kind of stuff. So let's not get caught up in, you know, yo, she the sister and all that kind of stuff, you know, in a time when jobs are at a premium. People are thinking about entrepreneurship. So what is she going to do, along with the other members of council, to make sure that, you know, resources are evenly spread out? There's still block grants and a lot of money available. That was a 20-year plan for that CBG money. And it hasn't been 20 years. So is she going to get that money released to minority business owners or potential minority business owners, or is it just going to be business as usual?
She's supposed to be calling in soon to the show.
Okay, and I hope that that's one of the questions that you guys asked. I mean, once again, man, I mean, she has an impeccable reputation, an impeccable record with education, you know. Let's be clear. I want all my listeners, like, I don't have any, like, she don't even register on a scandal meter, like, you know, at all. But I just don't need somebody who looks the part in there. And once again, when somebody goes to get a business, you know, in an urban area or urban themed business, you know, they aren't looked at the same way as another business. You know, if it's free market, it should be free market for everybody. You know, and my own thing is this, is I just feel like at least some of the stores and neighborhoods should reflect the people that live in those neighborhoods.
God, Jeff.
I mean, just some. That, like, I'm not saying you go, just some. Like, I just feel like it should just be a deliberate attempt. Like, hey, we're gonna block off these businesses for potential minority ownership. You know, like, I just feel like that's necessary. And I just feel like I hope that these are the questions that, you know, potential voters. Oh, and more importantly, tomorrow is the deadline for registration. So it's tomorrow or Tuesday, Tuesday is the deadline for registration if you want to be eligible for that election. So I'll just say tomorrow, just so nothing happens for you last-minute people or whatever. It must be filled out and postmarked by tomorrow for you to be eligible for that May 6th election. And I want people in not just this upcoming election but any election to think of this word, REP, R-E-P, register, educate, and participate. Simple. You know, you want to get as many people registered as possible. Once they're registered, you want to educate them. So then all these commercials and stuff go over their head. I know better. But then the most important part is participate. The votes are there to get the people elected to push forward more economic-friendly, you know, just strategies and issues and policies. But I said this a couple of weeks ago that the Democratic Party and Democracy for America and MoveOn.org and all these organizations play is just the biggest part of it as the so-called apathy of the people in the areas where the turnout is less during the midterms. And I say this, when there's a presidential election, that you know everybody's going to vote in anyway? Does that stop them from spending billions of dollars? No. But in elections where you probably would need that money to increase turnout, you spend less, and then you wonder why people don't vote in midterms? I mean, Carnell, am I wrong? Like, am I, like, being stupid and making that connection? Or, like...
Oh, no, you're dead right. And, I mean, it's a very valid point, too, because a lot of people, I mean, I'm starting to see people now posting signs over in their yards and stuff now for, but are they going to vote? That's the question I want to ask them. And I'm like, when she called in, because Leslie's supposed to be setting up the interview with us, so I think it's upcoming Thursday. But, with Miss Tweedy, but I was like, I'm going to ask you the same questions you asked. So I'm like, are you going to be one of these fly-by-night politicians that's just going to say you got the office position and not even be in your office when we need to talk or somebody got a question or something? Because I'm like, I don't want to vote for you because you're black. I want to vote for you because you actually going to make a difference say you're going to make a difference, and your actions going to speak louder than your words. So you gonna be up on the microscope, and I'm asking, are you willing to accept that? To the fact that you know a lot of people are gonna be leaning to you.
And I just think, man, like whether it's the local committees, the state committees, politicians themselves, and whoever is involved in this political game, like getting people elected has to be 24/7, 365. We have the technology to do it. And, you know, you have to always be canvassing. When you're not canvassing for people, you have to be canvassing for causes. You know, and not just lit drops, not just, you know, knocking and putting something in somebody's door and leaving, you know, because more people want to talk to people that come to your door now. Yeah, come back here. Yeah, so who you represent? Yeah, what are you about? Like, I've seen this. So more people are engaged, and you got to have more town hall meetings where people can voice their opinion. You see all the town halls that's happening now. What are they? Anti-Obama, anti-healthcare, you know? Where are the ones that have positive messages and actually have solutions, you know, to the things that are going on? No, they're just assuming that because right now, and I say that right now, they're on the side of right. I'm not saying, you know, liberal, Democrats, progressives are always right, but I'm just saying from an economic standpoint for this country moving forward, they're right in this issue. So let's please put that there. You know, don't change my words up. But in these issues, they're correct. And I just feel like that should be the focus. Let's educate more people. Let's not just assume that because we're right, these people know this or what have you. And it's not about them being dumb or uneducated. It's about not knowing what the hell is the truth. Man, they get on TV and they will just say something and it sound all like they talking from the heart. Please, you type that up in Google, like a fact check, and it's like, it was found that from PolitiFact, this was like 90% untruth and da-da-da-da-da. But the anchors and the hosts don't have the courage to say that right then and there. That's why I was so impressed with, what was it, Chris, I forget his last name, from MSNBC. Right. When
Matthew.
There you go. No. The younger kid. He had the on weekend show at first, and now he has a weekly show. But he had a lady on there, I think, talking about the Affordable Care Act, was it? And she was just cooking the numbers, and he just called her out right there, live, on the air, like, you know, facial expressions was just like, yo, this dumb bee. Like, I can't. And I know some people looked at it as you're not, and I'm like, no, sometimes I think when somebody just questions your intelligence that much, that you have to give them the dumb look. You have to. That's the problem now, is that we allow lies and untruths to float around too long. You know, it gets repeated.
It's just
too
like
much.
When, it's just like during the presidential election, during the debates, and Romney was, you know, getting up there lying, and you know, but he was smiling and engaging the audience. And after the debate was over, where he just 100% told lies, everybody was patting him on the back. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, really? You do know that he lied about everything. But it's all about perception to people instead of a lot of people.
That's why I say an educated electorate changes the game. An educated electorate just takes that stuff and just spits it back out. It's like, please. And once again, we're not talking about, you know, 100% turnout, 80% turnout, but we should be getting 60 to 70% turnout every single election. I'd rather that than the 30% midterm, 80% presidential numbers that we have now. You know,
and a lot of the turnout in the inner city needs to be better, just like for what you all were talking about with your city council turnout.
Oh, yo, sure, you're right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So, and I know my Lynchburg listeners are tuned in. I'm like, yo, the time is now. You know, like that block grant money been there for a minute. And all I've seen is one main developer being able to just own Fifth Street and try different businesses. Those businesses fail, and then other white people get to try it or whatever. And then they stick one token black business in there, and as soon as they have a problem, they're out.
You know, Bernie, that's like, too, right?
I know. And, you know, My whole thing is when are the people that look like the people in those areas going to get a chance? You know, like instead of trying to have a coffee shop that serves $8 breakfast in one of the poorest neighborhoods in the city.
I
was the manager there. So this isn't not what I heard. This is what I knew, and I argued with the owners weekly about this. Don't tell me about organic eggs. Then get regular ones. Like, yo, because I was like, yo, Chauncey down the street ain't trying to hear that. He want a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, and it better be less than $3. And you charging $5 for a sandwich and $8.50 for a breakfast, and that's the bargain basement.
Yo,
and you in the poorest neighborhood in the city.
Scott got a point too, because my mom had a damn conniption fit when I came in with a $6 combo from Hardee's the other day. She said $6 for this. I'm like, hey, you wanted it,
so. So I just feel like, you know, don't use the excuses about urban businesses and what they do is outdated, because I see non-urban businesses have the same problems. You know, they had this dilemma, because they had this dilemma of, will people from other parts of the city, you know, come there to make up from the neighborhood people basically protesting. And they found out the hard way. I'm like, yo, it's not enough people that live in these historic districts that's going to come here, y'all. It's not enough businesses downtown that's going to order, everybody's going to order lunch. You know, it's not enough office meetings or whatever to make up from nobody from the neighborhood coming in here.
That's true. It takes a combination of both. Like when I was in Atlanta, I would go to this soul food restaurant all the time. Man, the restaurant closed at like 7 p.m., and I made sure I was out because it was in the hood. I'm not going to lie. I don't know this place like that. But I would see this white family. I saw them a couple times, and they would come in because as soon as you would get in, they would let you stay as long as you were in before 7. And they would sit down, and and eat their food. And you would see people from, but they had neighborhood people. It's in the middle of like where Clark is and Stoneman.
Got you.
All those other colleges or whatever. But you would see people from all walks of life coming in to support that business. So it was great that they were given the opportunity. They've been there for a long time, you know, to operate. And so people need to take that initiative, and these politicians need to allow, like you said, minority businesses that opportunity to open a business.
And that's all that I'm saying. And then another thing. And once again, this is not just a Hill City problem. This is a American problem. The way that the information is put out there, right? Let me tell you, like, nobody hardly reads print papers anymore. But you want to know where, like, the $5 auctions for properties and stuff like that are listed at? Like, in the front page area, inside one of, like, the third or the fourth page down at the bottom in the corner.
Mm.
Where if you're not looking there for that particular thing, it will just look as if it's just white space with something written over it. That's done for a reason. It doesn't jump out at the average person. So that's another thing. Like stop hiding the dollar buildings and all that type of stuff. Like, Carnell, you know all that stuff that's on Main Street now. All that stuff could have been bought by anybody for a dollar. All that stuff down on Commerce Street, all those warehouses that's being developed could have all been bought for a dollar.
And, you know, it's funny because Chopper, they was like, you can have some, but you can't have all of it. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, sir. They cut Chopper short real quick. They was like, you can have this, you can have that, and you can't have no more, though.
Hold up, son. Hold up, son. You getting too big down here, boy. You know? Pull back.
They had to reel them back in. They had to reel them back in because I'm like, yo, this younger was doing excellent things for the black community. He opened up the boiler room. He opened up Choppers on the Ave. He opened up a nice little boutique down there. You get your hair cut, get it washed after you get it cut. I'm like, yo, he had visions there. Then that dude started getting a little too fancy. They was like, nah, nigga, the buck stops right here.
Yeah, but once again,
you get shit.
The average person wouldn't know. The average person wouldn't know about those houses that were in on the different historic districts. That once again, you could buy for a dollar. You got 2 years. You got 1 year to get it fixed up for it to be lived in, and I think 2 years for somebody to actually live in it or what have you. And, like, you have a certain time that you have to be in your ownership before you can rent it out or anything. But I'm talking about these are, like, big houses that, you know.
Huge houses.
Huge houses. You know, so it's a lot in the way it's controlled because they just know. It's almost putting the information on, like, a bulletin board at, like, a private country club and then saying, hey, well, at least we posted it.
and that's how information is
distributed. And that's why a lot of times when they say, well, there wasn't any minority interest, it was like nobody knew. You know, this wasn't on the news. This wasn't, you know, it wasn't any public hearings or, you know, any type of meetings about this. This was all done in committee by city council and then snuck through while a few people were on vacation.
They're actually doing that in Chicago right now, but I actually saw that on the news. So if those people, are going to take advantage of it, I'm like, hey, I saw it in the news. So I hope they do.
If the information is out there, there's no excuse. But what I'm getting at is I used to work for the city. And to me, the information is worse at getting out there than it is better. You know? And those are the things that's going to even, you know, like kind of even the playing field. You know, like, is she going to get in there or, you know, and push, you know, Miss Foster and push Mike Gillette and, you know, these other so-called, you know, friendlies to, like, hey, make a real investment, you know, in downtown. Not just, and I mean no disrespect to Chopper, but not just for the Ralph Wilsons of the world. You know, what about for the Clifton Clarks of the world?
Exactly.
You know,
shout out to Clifton.
Shout out to Clifton. You know, but I mean, but you know what I'm getting at? Like, he, you know, he got an impeccable record. You know, good guy. No, you know, nothing in his past that, you know. So, like, once again, it you. Like, when you say urban, it's not like you're giving a business to a gang member, you know, going back to the beginning of the show. You could be given the next big businessman a chance, the chance that he needed. You know, where is the tax break for our art space to be able to do stuff downtown? Or for our upscale restaurant.
That's true.
You know, downtown is like 60% African American, 70% minority. And the only minority business you gonna tell me are like barbershops, or located in the community market, so they're more like flea market type businesses.
You right, it's more like flea market. I mean, because one of my best friends, my dad's best friends, he owns a sandwich shop there in the community market. And it did pretty good until I think he finally retired from doing it. But he'll
no,
like
I'm
one
not,
of the
like,
only
I'm
mainstays
the
down
there. Money that they make, but I'm not, but it's not, they don't have a business down there. They have a booth or a table within a business. You see what I'm saying? Like, you know, there are plenty of other office space down there. That's just that they rather make in the lofts and stuff. You know, it ain't enough going on downtown for people to want to live there and pay those prices. But than to try a new business. And this is the stuff that people need to stop. You know,
stop working on
the tributaries to our neighborhood just to make it easier for other people to come here. You know, before you take care of us in the neighborhood.
I think a lot of times that it's even more difficult for a minority to start a business. Just speaking from experience down here, you know, my mom was trying to open up a restaurant at one point. She still will in the future. But, you know, it's just, you know, the regulations and the things, it was like extra, you know, I just feel that more the politicians, local city politicians, need to work harder to point people toward grants and people who are willing to help if they want to keep a minority business in the community. Give them a helping hand, you know, show them the ropes and the things that they need to do to get their business off the ground. If that was, there are a lot of people with a lot of positive ideas for their community. They just need a little help.
This is all that I'm saying. This is all that I'm saying. Because to me, if you vote with somebody in that's just gonna, you know, be, you know, one vote, you know, for nothing. Because you basically, if you got Trinae in there, and Carnell knows this better than anybody, you know, you basically got four Democrats against two Republicans and one Tea Party. You know?
Pretty much.
So, like, any type of new initiative or whatever shouldn't have any problems passing. I don't care about all the arguments and all this kind of stuff, but it wouldn't have any problems passing. So if the people in these poor neighborhoods in these areas to where businesses are being shut down and they're not being replaced with anything or whatever, if they're not given an opportunity to get back on their feet or to try new things, you know, been out of work for months or whatever, but don't work 20 years of their life, damn, you don't think that they deserve an opportunity to maybe own a business? Like, look at all the money they paid in the Social Security that they're not going to get. all the taxes they paid. And they don't get an opportunity, you know, the same opportunity you would give somebody coming from another country to open up a 7-Eleven.
That's true.
No stab. Just being honest. I didn't say that was wrong. I just said give the same. You don't know their credit. They coming from another country. So, you know, I just feel like there are so many things that can happen immediately, not things that you have to write into law and it takes 5 or 6 years to happen. I feel like things that can be talked about as soon as people are in office and can be put into motion within 6 months, you know, to a year. The application process can almost start immediately because, once again, the money is there and it was on a 20-year plan. And if you don't believe me, just Google Lynchburg, Virginia, 20-year comprehensive plan. And if you got time to read it, you'll see everything that – and this is public information. This isn't secret. But they know. They put it out there, and, you know, with Bible thickness, who reading it? You know, man, all this. I'd rather not, you know. Yeah, I'm all right, you know. I'm good with that. But I think that it could be broken down into talking points and stuff, and if they really want people in the neighborhoods where the money was designed to go to understand, they would do a better job of educating the woman. I just don't think that's too much to ask.
Not at all.
So, you know, everybody has a story about what people want and the crime rates and unemployment in certain areas and all this kind of stuff. But there are so many other factors that also contribute to those numbers that are never factored in when these people that know nothing make these assertions. You know, And the thing is, it's not illegal. You know, what they're doing is legal, but it's like it's at the bottom of legal. it's like right there. Like, well, technically they didn't do anything wrong. Anytime you got to put technically in front of something, it's probably something unsavory, you know, in those actions. So it is what it is. It is what it is. Good news on the Chris Christie front for people that are still following that. The grand jury has finally convened, and they are finally starting to interview some of his aides. So pretty soon we'll find out will any indictments come out, and, you know, and will anybody within his upper management will be charged. It's just such a laundry list of the things that, like, they're finding on this guy, that he can't resign. He got to go out fighting. Because if he resigned, they're going to keep digging. They're going to find enough stuff to put him away. So he has to try to, like, be in the game where he can still try to control stuff or whatever, and he got to just try to fight it out. I mean, he's done illegal stuff from an environmental standpoint, just, I mean, all the way across the board. And then all of those happy meetings that they were showing on TV, those are over with, you know. It's like, and they didn't even let y'all know that the one time that he went where they actually clapped for him was in Huntington County, which is in the western part of the state, unaffected by Hurricane Sandy, in one of his biggest supported areas. Every other town hall he went to, people were ejected for protesting.
But didn't he get in front of Diane Sawyer on ABC News and basically sit there and say that he had nothing to hide and all this other stuff, and every question she asked, he basically jumped it and didn't even answer?
Right. I don't even watch his interviews anymore, because if it's somebody that's like a senior journalist, he'll just do what you said. If it's somebody he thinks, you know, is a junior one, he'll bully them. So it just gets me upset at what he's allowed to get away with. It's like, okay, he gets to get on TV and be critical of Harry Reid and be critical of the president with all the stuff that you have hanging over your head. And let's be clear, people, and I know friends of the show, y'all know, but this is New Jersey. You got to do some incredible stuff to get charged with anything in this state as a politician. I don't care what side of the aisle you on. So for him to be facing charges in this state, it had to be some miraculous stuff that him and his staff was doing. And then let's be clear, all the stuff that they've ever asked him to do, he's doing now. They said that, Bill Sampson, he shouldn't be working the case. He shouldn't still be working with Port Authority. There's too many conflicts of interest. So what happens a week ago? He resigned for what? Conflict of interest. But that's after he's made millions and millions of dollars on no-bid contracts because of his association with Chris Christie. And then
there's his fact finder, who found him not guilty of any wrongdoing, was like, I wonder how many people are going to fall for that one. A league affirmed that he hired to find him not guilty.
No. A league that he made the taxpayers hire to do that. Like, hold up.
Yeah.
He ain't paying a dime of that. The New Jersey taxpayers paying that $1 million for that nonsense where none of the major people that needed to be questioned was even questioned, and they won't even hand over all the findings to the actual committee to let them go through it. So, I mean, you know, nobody's buying that. You know, people are just saying, you know, have to say what their statement was just to say it, but nobody's, like, taking that. Look, would U.S. Attorney Chris Christie, when he was investigating somebody, allow them to hand him their own investigation and then he just say, okay, cool? No. So how does he expect, you know, to get that treatment? And that's just my thing with him. It's just the audacity. Like, he just doesn't care. And you see it. He's going to go out fighting. And believe me, if he goes down, it's a bunch of other corrupt sheriffs, mayors, you know, and other legislators that are going to go down right along with him because they're defending him too hard. It's like two or three, like, in the legislature, and there's a couple of sheriffs that are defending him, and I'm just like, yeah, they got a lot of stuff hanging over their head, and they know if he's ever taken out of office, then it's a wrap. Like, he's losing the state as we speak. Now, this is New Jersey we're talking about, people, and last week in the North Star Ledger, the New Jersey Association of Prosecutors said that it is a waste of time to continue to prosecute marijuana cases. That's basically the people, like you say, well, it's not the judges. It don't have to be the judges. These are the people that decide if the case even goes to court. And they're saying, look, we're tired of this. It's a waste of time, and it's taking our offices away from fighting real crime. Now, of course, Chris Christie's totally against it, but the Republicans in the legislature are with it, and the Democrats are with it. And now they're just trying to figure out, do they have enough votes to have the two-thirds to override his veto? So he's losing ground even with his own party on major issues. I'm thinking, okay, I know New Jersey got approved for medical marijuana, but please, it's about to turn to California. And once again, this is a state with a Republican governor where everybody doesn't fear him anymore. Like, this was all the prosecutors, well, all the people that represent all the prosecutors in the state of New Jersey came out in a joint statement to basically say we're not doing it anymore.
I just think it's funny, and I think Coleman is definitely a bitch because it's all coming back to him tenfold. I still remember him when he first came in. He fired damn near everybody that was on the staff before he got there, cleaned it up. Everybody giving him a round of applause. He's going to be the next Republican candidate to run against Obama. And then one day he's fat, and then one day he's skinny, and then he's back to being fat. And he was giving out high fives to Obama during Sandy and kissing his ass and stuff while he was in there. And then coming to find out he misused half those funds, and I'm like, this dude is nothing but a big fraud.
Pretty much.
And it's just funny that you said it because this whole party is just like, nah, partner, you on your own on this one.
And that's what I'm getting at. When your party disses you in regards to drugs, it's a problem. Like, they're just like, you know what, man, we done with this, dog. And, you know, that's the one thing you usually could keep conservatives together on, is the war on drugs. Like, even as outdated as it is, you could usually unify them on that. And for them to be bailing on him, like, by the busload. And then, once again, this wasn't the progressive prosecutors of the state of New Jersey. This was the organization, you know, headed up by every district attorney office in every county, basically saying enough is enough. And I just feel like it's just something that's just starting to happen. And like I said, every state that I thought wouldn't even think about it are coming out with like some medical marijuana proposal to try to make money. That's going to grow into a maybe not a Colorado situation, but some sort of controlled legal situation, because everybody's hurting for money. And I hate the fact that it took something like money, and, you know, we have no choice but to do this to try to make up our books to do this. Because not because of that weed is just so, so good. Look, I'm not going there. But what I am saying is that there are so many prescription drugs that were so, so bad, way more addictive, that people are locked up for, people are addicted to, or people have killed for, or whatever. And instead of them being, in a lot of cases, not even being locked up, being sent to rehab where they're giving more.
That's true.
So my whole thing was is that these untruths was out there to keep the J&Js and the Squibs, you know, in business. And they had the money to keep that dialogue out there. Like, and I said this a couple of weeks ago, and everybody laughed. But do y'all understand that Pepsi and Coca-Cola are two of the most biggest businesses in the world? And they're selling something that has no type of, no type of nutritional value at all. And it is able to be sold legally in all 50 states. 1 liter, 2 liter, 3 liters, 6-pack, 12-pack case. And the only thing we can attribute soda to is what? Diabetes.
I still have issue with weed or whatever. Just on the, I've come into the conclusion. To agree with you on the medicinal marijuana compared to the prescription drugs, I don't really agree with prescription drugs either. But, you know, I get that. It's my thing is that when it gets into the hands of kids, you know, there were some kids on college kids just flew into Colorado.
Alcohol, that's
on spring break.
In the hands of kids. It's cigarettes.
Man,
that's
this kid ate an edible cookie. I mean, a weed cookie or whatever, marijuana cookie, and jumped off a balcony in Colorado the other day. And they flew in specifically because weed was legal in that state. I still have issues with weed. I mean, I just do.
I mean, no, and you can have those issues, but they can't just be, oh, well, it's going to fall into the hand. And I mean, no, it can be, but I just don't think that turn that off. That's an accurate statement because it's like, okay, I mean, kids get past alcohol. Kids get past cigarettes, which, once again, on the side of the package says, you smoke me, you die. And what did they do? They didn't outlaw them. They just said, we'll just increase the tax on them. we'll just make the price of your life cost more. You know, instead of paying $3, you pay $5 in some states, $7 in some other states for the right to die. So it's so many things that if it's in the hands of a child, it's going
to
be.
Well, the tobacco company, they market their products to kids. You know, when you go to the 7-Eleven and you see these strawberry flavored Black and Milds, well, that's not marketed to adults. I see the kids, you know, they're 18 years old, which makes them legal, and they're just buying them by the handful. And I'm like, man, that's terrible.
You're actually supporting my point now, but what I'm getting at is like the access to children has nothing to do with the medical mistruths that have been put out there for 20 and 30 and 40 years just to help the the big pharmaceutical companies just basically run just the whole market and push all of these drugs out there, half of them getting recalled. You know, you sit up in the middle of the night, did you take me a couple of months ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You might be fucked up.
But just like prescription drugs affect people differently, weed affects people differently. Like the young man who jumped off the balcony. I mean, I've known people with personal experiences that I know who smoked weed, who had to quit smoking. They were like, oh, my God, it did this and that and the other to me.
I know people that got liver disease and had to stop because they were going to die. I know people that smoke cigarettes that either had lung cancer or some other disease or what have you. I know people that drank too much soda and now they have they're diabetic. You can name so many
things.
You're
adding another component to the market.
So to say that,
I
feel this way about weed, yes, have that personal opinion, but don't eject opinions as facts. Because, yeah,
no,
this
but
little,
it, no,
little
I,
boy.
It's a fact
boy,
that these things
he could have did the same
to be.
Thing as if he was drunk. He could have did the same thing as he was drunk. He could have did the same thing if he had taken heroin. He could have did the same thing if he had eaten that candy laced with heroin that's floating all around the schools that the American Sheriff's Association say is a way bigger problem than this nonsense war on drugs centered around marijuana, which is just a guise just to arrest more African-Americans and Latinos. I didn't say that. That's what law enforcement says. I didn't say the thing about the medical uses of it or the recreational uses of it. Doctors have said that. Doctors who don't have they don't have no weed stock or whatever, but guess what? They don't have no hydrocodone stock either. They don't have those high-powered drug stock either. So they don't have any motivation to say the things they say other than in their professional medical opinion based on the fact that they know from the in the job that they are a professional, this is what they said. Not because Sky feels this way or anybody else that's pro 420, but because their medical expertise tells them that. So
what
that,
it all boils down to, though, is that it's basically just going to cut into the drug companies and stuff, where they're making billions upon billions of dollars trying
to
come up with another, when they try to come up with a miracle drug, and they got one that somebody can grow in their backyard, and they can't regulate that and get billions and billions upon billions of dollars off each year when they're sitting there. Because I'm going to be honest, when I hurt my back, I ruptured 3 discs in there. And I was on all the medicine. It got to the point where none of that medicine worked. I ain't gonna lie, I started smoking weed. I started feeling a whole lot better. But did you think the doctors wanted to hear that? Nah, they was gonna give you more prescriptions for hydrocodone and oxycodone and all them other drugs that everybody addicted to. But I know I'm strong enough to know that I'm like, I'm not becoming addicted to that. At one point, I had over 300 pills sitting over in my house that I finally flushed away. Because people found out that I was getting ready to come to my house, knocking on the door. Like, yo, you still got some pills? Twin. No, nigga, get the fuck away from me.
Is there a way to regulate weed so that it's more, to make it safe? You know what I mean? Look, I don't smoke. I smoked 4 cigars in my life, like, whatever. Then I quit. It's like, but my dad, who's a chronic smoker, who's actually lost both of his legs, contributing to smoking, smoking contributed to that. You know, told me, hey, you don't want to pick up this lifestyle. You know, I always had a fascination with the big stogies or whatever, and I smoked by 4. And he said, you know what, do not pick up this lifestyle. It's not good, and you will get addicted. I said, okay, Daddy, and I stopped, never smoked again.
Marijuana, those stogies aren't marijuana. Stogies are more dangerous than marijuana.
Because they do not have filters, which is another reason why I was like, hold on, that's stupid for me to be smoking a cigar this big without that it doesn't have a filter, which
you
is another reason why.
You pulling everything possible in here to attribute to...
My question is there a way to make weed safe, to make sure it's safe for people to smoke?
Cigar smoking, and yo, alcohol is not safe. Alcohol is like... Once you have a drink, you're putting alcohol in your body. So that my whole thing is this. If doctors are saying that it's no dangerous than this, it's no dangerous than this, it's no dangerous than this, and in some states they are finding ways to regulate it. In New Jersey, the law that they're proposing is no public consumption, private consumption, like obviously in your house or whatever, up to an ounce possession, and you can have up to 6 plants. So this ain't something that they just thought of. This was something that they've been thinking about, and they figuring out how to get it regulated and how they're going to be able to make money. It's a dispensary 10 minutes from here. So
That's my only question. Can it be made, like, safe and make sure it's not mixed in with PCP and all
that
other crap?
Weed is the one thing that is grown that doesn't come with anything else. When somebody's getting any other drug, they don't know if they're getting a bad batch. You're talking about somebody that was eating something that wasn't supposed to have weed in it, and it did, and it was a little boy. So, a brownie ain't supposed to affect him like that. So, yeah, he did something, and I'm not sitting there saying, he just can't handle it. No, that's a sad story, and he shouldn't have been consuming that. But what I'm getting at is weed is the one drug that you know is coming from a seed. And then when you're consuming it, that's up to the consumer what they put in it, but you're going to see if it's laced with PCP or whatever. Now, look, there are unscrupulous people in every walk of life. Yeah, it's going to be somebody that's going to have some smoke. They're going to dip it in something or whatever, trying to sell it or something or whatever, and somebody's going to get sick or unfortunately die or whatever, but that's it, anything. I know bootleg liquor houses where they make drinks and stuff, and people getting sick or whatever. I just feel like if weed was regulated, it'd be corny anyway, because then it's like you gotta go to the store to get weed, but whatever. But if it's regulated, I just feel like the problems that people are complaining about won't outweigh the petty arrests
you know, the that the log jam in the legal system for misdemeanor crimes. Now, yeah, are there going to be drug dealers that are going to try to capitalize on it being legal and they're going to get caught up? Yes, and they should, you know.
But
once
the same
again,
thing can be said for the ones going across state lines buying cigarettes and bringing them back to New York.
Thank you. So that's what I'm getting at. Is this going to be some type of black market in everything you think of? It's black market in cigarettes. It's still a black market in alcohol. Please. It's about to get warm. See how many people going to be making their own version of liquor, some pouring liquor, whatever. Yeah, you already know what it is. So that, you know, that's going to happen. And once again, when they get caught, whatever the law says, that, hey, you got to deal with that. But I just feel like for, especially for people who have aches and pains and have tried different things and it didn't work, I use, what is
like
it,
me,
Montel
like
Williams,
me,
for example. He sat there right on his show and said he wake up every morning to two or three joints because this is what he needs to do to get through his day, you know. And look, I'm not sitting there pitching it like, oh, it's the miracle or that it's only going to be for medicinal use. I think it should be used. I mean, I think it should be illegal, be legal recreational, but an age limit on it. And, you know, if somebody abuses it, once again, like that, they are locked up or whatever. But I just feel like
you don't agree that we affect you when you drive?
Huh?
You know,
and yo, and they're pulling people over for that. But look, do you think
right,
do you think that people don't drive and smoke right now?
No, I know that for a fact.
Okay, so it's like these things that you guys are talking about, people are driving and smoking it, and it's illegal. People are drinking and driving, and it's illegal. I'm not trying to bring you to this side or nothing. I'm just saying that, look, when I lived in Virginia, I had a smoking route, and it was through the country, through the mountains, all of that. It was about an hour ride, and it was to ride, smoke, chill, get my mind off things. So, look, people are doing that now. Buzz driving or whatever the hell they call it, please. That's been going on. So, once again, if they want to equate that to a DUI, like that stuff that, you know, they have to, you know, figure out the effects and discuss or whatever.
They think that it'll be a spike in those numbers. That's one of the things.
No. I don't, because I think those people are out there now. And in most, even in recreational states, you can't just walk around blowing.
Okay.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So it was like legal, like public consumption is still illegal. So they couldn't say, well, you know, I'm out here, it's legal. Like, no, they know they're breaking the law. If they in the car, anybody in the car smoking, just like if somebody has an open alcohol container in the car, whether the driver has it or not, that's illegal. So, nah, I feel you on that. But what I'm getting at is it's going on now, and I just don't think that it'll be a spike in it. I just think that it'll be more documented. You know, cases of it. And this is why I say that, is because they won't equate buzz driving to DUI. And so they'll rather take the buzz driving charge than to take the DUI. DUI, you done.
They should make them equal.
That's what I'm saying. Like, see, that's what me and you agree, you know, because now they met us halfway on this one, stoners. They said, "Yo,
look, I had a student whose dad, I guess he had so many DUIs that they put a machine in his car that he had a breathalyzer in his car that he had to blow into it before
the whole thing starts. I don't care where you work or what your job is. When they have to do that much stuff for you to have to drive, you should not be allowed to drive. You know, that, like, that's where I'm getting at with this. And I'm glad you brought that up. Now, imagine how many times he had to have got caught for them to put a contraption in his car to say, hey, we can't trust you not to take a sip before you drive. So we got to put something in your car that makes it where it won't start up if you have alcohol on your breath. Like, cuz, do you understand?
My thing is, I think they should have the I agree that they shouldn't be able to drive it as well. But my thing is, if you got caught, whatever, smoking weed, driving, maybe they should put some type of breathalyzer in your car as well, or whatever. Well, what are they going to do? Say you can't drive, you know. Well, they should, actually, but
because
it's
basically it's a minimum of three, at least three DUIs before they put that on you, and it's got to be court ordered, too. And you have to pay for the breathalyzer. So, I mean, because I know one of my friends, he had to do it. He had to pay for that little breathalyzer that they installed in his car. I think it was like $80 for however long he had it, $80 a month, I want to say it was. And he had to literally blow in his car before he had to drive. And I'm like, if you ever get to the point of this again, you don't need to be driving. You shouldn't be driving right now. But thank God the state of Virginia came up with this huge, brilliant idea so you can blow in your car before you can take off and before you can start it. But I'm like, you know how many people can just sit there and just, yeah, I think it's a good idea, but I think there's some flaws in it, too. And it's just sad.
But once again, it's saying, hey, you got to break the law three times. And, you know, before you do it the fourth time, we will let you drive, but we have to stop you from killing yourself and possibly somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm getting at is it's so much leeway in other chemical dependencies, for lack of a better term. Like, if you get hooked on heroin, you get entered into a methadone clinic. You know, like if they find out a teacher or somebody is hooked on, I don't want to use teachers. Let's just say a white collar employee, you know, gets hooked on cocaine, goes to rehab. And I just feel like these are some of the things that contribute to, like, a lot of the stuff that's going on that has nothing to even do with weed. You know, weed actually mellows most out. You know?
That was a happy weed day.
If it's straight weed.
Like I said, man, you know, we could argue all day about good, bad, whatever. I just don't feel like that there are as many health risks and a lot of stuff that's legal. And I feel like if those items are legal and we have medical, you know, objective medical proof that says that, you know, there's no more harm in it than, you know, and it's actually less harm than in cigarettes and some of these other items, I just feel like it should be made legal. And people are going to get arrested for abuses and, you know, and having more than they're supposed to and growing more than they're supposed to and trying to have illegal businesses and things like that. And they have to deal with the repercussions that come with that. But there are going to be other people, once again, not just people that are using it for medical use, but some people that are like, "Word, use it for recreational use, chill, and hey." They're going to use it, and they're going to be responsible with it. Now, they're going to be kids, just like who get alcohol and have parties on the weekend and beach houses and stuff as we speaking right now. So, are going to be able to cop big amounts of marijuana and have those same kind of parties. But I don't think that a legal or a illegal moniker in front of it is going to change those things. So, That's all, you know. I ain't trying to get nobody to start smoking or whatever. I'm just like, just compare weed to everything else before,
I mean, I definitely
you know.
Agree with you in the sense that, I mean, on a lot of points, and they really need to get a lot of these drugs off the market. I mean, when you sit there and listen to the commercial and one of the side effects is death, I don't understand why you would take it. So
yeah.
I definitely wholeheartedly agree, you know, with the prescription drugs, the pharmaceuticals putting out there.
I gotta cut you off.
I say don't take nothing.
No doubt. All right, y'all, that's our time, man. Once again, I'm glad to be back. Check us out next week and the week after. And the week after, as we'll be covering closely those Hill City Council elections. And, well, I guess the Twins will be doing old school tomorrow, I hope. And if not.
Yeah, I'm doing the show tomorrow.
No doubt. Cool. And then we got Tommy should be back on Monday and Music 101 on Tuesday. Yo, this is Sky for Politrick. And I'm out. And don't forget to check me out on the playlist Monday nights on Spin Syndicate Radio. Peace.